Mitt Romney's economic philosophy.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Mitt Romney is one step closer to being the Republican presidential nominee this morning after beating his opponents by double digits in yesterday's Illinois primary. Romney put his business background front and center as he campaigned in Illinois and as he claimed victory last night.
Our economic freedom will be on the ballot. I'm offering a real choice and a new beginning. I'm running for president because I have the experience and the vision to get us out of this mess.
Joining us now to talk about that experience is Benjamin Wallace Wells. He's a contributing editor at New York Magazine who wrote an extensive profile of Romney's business background. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with Mitt Romney's time at Bain Capital. How would you describe Mitt Romney as a businessman, and what drives him?
Mitt Romney is a deeply, deeply analytic figure. He's somebody who, when you talk to his business associates, they praise him as somebody who is aggressive about reform, as somebody who brought this kind of idealized Harvard Business School consultant perspective to private equity.
You call him a perfectly objective efficiency machine. What do you mean by that?
Look, from early in the 1980s, what private equity did is it brought a really very vigorous focus on efficiency. Romney was not only one of the first figures in making that the habit of private equity and then the habit of American business, he also personified it. And so in each one of his business transactions, when you talk to the other folks who are involved in it, you see just this single-minded, vigorous focus on returning shareholder value, on making companies more efficient. And there are those that credit him for this and say, when you look at the trajectory of the corporation over the last 30 years, what you have now is a far more ruthless machine. And in part, that's due to the innovations that Romney and others like him promulgated in the early 1980s.
What about this impression that's out there that Mitt Romney is not like the rest of us, that he has friends who own sports teams or that his wife drives a couple of Cadillacs? Does Mitt Romney have any friends who aren't rich?
Yeah, he has friends that claim he at least seems natural when hanging out with friends who are not wealthy. But I think there's a much bigger issue here. Romney believes in the meritocracy. He thinks that those who are rich mostly because they've earned it. What he's looking at when he looks at his friends is not people who are the owners of the Boston Celtics, which is one of his early partners at Bain Capital. It's people who are there because they are successful, because they are smart, because they earned it. And, you know, there's no question that's more foundational in this election than whether the American meritocracy is still working. And one of the things that you see not only in Romney's proposals, but also in his personal life, is just this commitment to the idea that it is.
Benjamin Wallace Wells is a contributing editor at New York Magazine. Thanks so much for talking with us.
I really enjoyed it.
And you can hear our conversations about all the candidates at marketplace.org. Gas prices are averaging $3.86 a gallon nationwide this morning. So let's talk about one proposal to bring them down involving our nation's ports. As Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, the White House may grant a waiver to something called the Jones Act.
The Jones Act isn't one of those laws most of us have on the tip of our tongue. So I asked Kevin Book, managing director of research firm Clearview Energy Partners, for a quick explanation.
The Jones Act is a law that prohibits foreign flag tankers from taking cargo from one American port to another American port.
Basically, it keeps the American shipping business for American companies and American workers. Problem is, there aren't that many U.S. tankers to move gas from the Gulf to the East Coast.
Where there's currently a shortage.
But would a waiver really make it cost less for East Coasters to fill up?
It might have some small effect on gas prices.
Jack Plunkett heads the market research firm Plunkett Limited.
We're not talking about dollars. We're talking about a few cents.
Those pennies are a big deal in an election year. But any move to waive the Jones Act could alienate U.S. labor unions. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up 0.25% right now in London, down 0.5% in Tokyo. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 68 points to close at 13,170.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
In a courtroom here in Los Angeles this morning, it's Big Sugar versus Big Corn. Sugar producers claim their rivals in the high fructose corn syrup business misled consumers in a campaign aimed at improving the corn sweetener's image. They want the ads off the air, and they want to be paid for damages. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports.
I learned whether it's corn sugar or cane sugar, your body can't tell the difference. Sugar is sugar.
Those were fighting words to the sugar industry. Attorney Adam Fox says corn refiners are trying to make high fructose corn syrup sound natural.
It is a man-made product that uses advanced technology that was not even developed until the 1960s.
Sugar's benefited from the backlash against high fructose corn syrup. The sweetener's been cast as a dietary villain by anti-obesity campaigners, despite little scientific evidence it's less healthy than regular sugar. Marketing consultant Jonathan Salem Baskin sees this as a market share battle between two nutritional no-nos.
Whatever the outcome, isn't the next question then, well, what are we going to do about too much sugar?
A recent report said kids and teens now get about 16% of their daily calories from sugar of all kinds that are added to processed foods. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, to the ship once known as the Exxon Valdez, the one responsible for the worst oil tanker spill in U.S. history back in 1989. That ship has just been sold for scrap for about $16 million. That's about 250 times as much as Exxon had to pay for cleaning up the spill. And by the way, it's not called the Exxon Valdez anymore. Now it's called the Oriental Nicety. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.